I said, you weren't like that last night. Last night, she snapped. 2 nights ago, at least. That was because he was there. Thomas?
Her lower lip abruptly trembled, and she looked as though she might cry.
Yes. Yes, Thomas. He makes it quieter inside me. There's so much trying to get out, like at the hospital. Control, they said. I don't have the kind of control other people have. It's hormones, but the drugs only make me sick. He doesn't, though. Only a little tired.
But, her face darkened again.
Shut up, she snapped. But, idiot asking idiot questions. Fool did not want me when I was willing to give. Nothing does that. None of them. Because they all want to take.
I nodded and didn't say anything as she became more agitated. It might have been politically incorrect of me, but the word loony all but appeared in a giant neon sign over Justine's head. Okay, I said. Let's just take it easy, all right? She glowered at me, falling silent. Then she slunk back to the space between the wall and the washing machine and sank into it. She started playing with her hair and took no apparent notice of me. I got up. It was hard. Everything spun around. On the floor, I found a dusty towel. I used it to sweep some of the grime off my skin. I went to the door and tried it. It stood firmly locked. I tested my weight against it, but the effort made a sudden fire of scarlet flash through my belly, and I dropped to the floor, convulsing again. I threw up in the middle of it and tasted blood on my mouth. I lay exhausted for a while after that and might have dropped off to sleep again. I looked up to find Justine holding the towel and pushing it fitfully at my skin, the fresh mess. How long? I managed to ask her. How long have I been here? She shrugged without looking up.
They had you for a while, just outside this door. I heard them taking you, playing with you, only 2 hours maybe. And then they put you in here. I slept, awoke, maybe another 10 hours or less, or more, I don't know.
I kept an arm wrapped around my belly, grimacing and nodded.
All right, I said, we have to get out of here.
She brayed out a sharp laugh.
There is no out of here. This is the larder. The Christmas turkey doesn't get up and walk away.
I shook my head.
I was poisoned. If I don't get to a hospital, I'm going to die.
She smiled again, played with her hair, dropping the towel.
Almost everyone dies in a hospital. You get to be someplace different. Isn't that better?
It's one of those things I could live without, I said.
Justine's expression went slack, her eyes distant, and she became still. I stared at her, waved my hand in front of her eyes, snapped my fingers. She didn't respond. I sighed and stood up, then tested the door again. It was firmly bolted shut from the other side. I couldn't move it.
Super, I sighed. That's great. I'm never going to get out of here.
Behind me, something whispered. I spun, putting the door at my back, searching for the source of the sound. A low mist crept out of the wall. A smoky, slithery mass that whirled itself down into the floor like an ethereal lace. The mist touched lightly at my blood on the floor where I'd thrown up, and then began to swirl and shape itself into something vaguely human.
Great, I muttered. More ghosts. If I get out of this alive, I've got to get a new job.
The ghost took shape before me, very slowly, very translucently. It resolved itself into a form of a young woman, attractive, dressed like an efficient secretary. Her hair was pulled up into a bun, but for a few appealing tendrils that fell down to frame her cheeks. Her ghostly wrist was crusted with congealed blood, spread around a pair of fang punctures. Abruptly, I recognized her, the girl Bianca had fed upon until she died.
Rachel? I whispered. Rachel, is that you?
As I spoke her name, she turned to me, her eyes slowly focusing on me, as though beholding me through a misty veil. Her expression turned, no pun intended, grave. She nodded to me in recognition.
Hell's bells.
souls, I whispered. No wonder Bianca got stuck on a vengeance kick. She literally was haunted by your death. The spirit's face twisted in distress. She said something, but I could only hear it as a distant, muffled sound accompanying the movement of her lips. I can't understand you, I said. Rachel, I can't hear you. She almost wept, it seemed. She pressed her hand to her ghostly breast and grimaced at me. You're hurt, I guessed. You're hurt? She shook her head, then touched her temple and drew her finger slowly down over her eyes, closing them. Ah, I said, you're tired. She nodded. She made a supplicating motion, holding out her hands as though asking for help. I don't know what I can do for you. I don't know if I can help you rest or not. She shook her head again, then she nodded, toward the door, and made a bottle-shaped curving gesture of her hands. Bianca? I said. When she nodded, I went on. You think Bianca can lay you to rest? She shook her head. She's keeping you here? Rachel nodded, her ghostly pretty face agonized. That makes sense, I muttered. Bianca fixates on you as you die tragically, binds your ghost here. The ghost appears to her and drives her into a vengeance, and she blames it all on me. Rachel's ghost nodded. I didn't kill you, I said. You know that. She nodded again. But I'm sorry. I'm sorry that me being in the wrong place at the wrong time set you up to die. She gave me a gentle smile, which transformed into a sudden expression of horror. She looked past me at Justine, and then her image began to fade, to withdraw into the wall. Hey, I said. Hey, wait a minute. The mist vanished, and Justine started to move. She rose casually and stretched, then glanced down at herself and ran her hands appreciatively down over her breasts, her stomach. Very nice, she said, her voice subtly altered, different. Rather like Lydia in a lot of ways, isn't she, Mr. Dresden? I tensed up. Kravos, I whispered. Justine's eyes flooded with blood through the whites. Oh, yes, she said. Yes, indeed. Man, you need to get a life in the worst way. That was you, wasn't it? The telephone call the night Agatha Hagglethorne went nuts. My last call, Kravos said through Justine's lips, nodding. I wanted to savor what was about to happen. Like now. Bianca has ordered that you should receive no visitors, but I just couldn't resist the chance to take a look at you. You want to look at me? I asked. I tapped my head. Come on in. There's a few things in here I'd like to show you. Justine smiled and shook her head. It would be too much effort for too little return. Even without the shelter of a threshold, possessing even a mind so weak as this child's requires a considerable amount of effort. Effort, she added, which was made possible by a grant from the Harry Dresden Soul Foundation. I bared my teeth. Leave this girl alone. Oh, but she's fine, Kravos said through Justine's lips. She's really happier like this. She can't hurt anyone, you see, or herself. Her ranting emotions can't compel her to act. That's why the whites love her so much. They feed on emotion. This little darling is positively mad with it. Justine's body shivered and arched sensuously. It's rather exciting, actually. Madness. I wouldn't know, I said. Look, if we're going to fight, let's fight. Otherwise, blow. I've got things to do. I know, Justine said. You're busy dying of some kind of poisoning. The vampires tried to drink from you, but you made some of them very sick, so they left you more or less untapped. Highly miffed, Bianca was. She wanted you to die as food for her and her new children. What a shame. Come on now, Dresden. You and I are among the wise. We both know you wouldn't want to die at the hands of a lesser being. I might rank among the wise, I said, but you, Kravos, are nothing but a two-bit troublemaker. You're the stupidest thug in Wizardland, and that you managed to live as long as you did without killing yourself is some kind of miracle in itself. Justine snarled and lunged for me. She pinned me to the door with one hand and a casual supernatural strength that told me that she could have pushed her hand through me just as easily. "So self-righteous," she snarled. "Always sure that you're right, that you're in command, that you have the power and all the answers." I grimaced. Pain flared through my belly again, and it was suddenly all I could do not to scream. "Well, Dresden, you're dead. You've been slated to die. You'll be gone in the next few hours, and even if you aren't, if you live through what they have planned, the poison will kill you slowly. And before you go, you'll sleep. Bianca won't stop me this time. You'll sleep, and I'll be there. I'll come into your dreams, and I'll make your last moments on Earth a nightmare that lasts for years." She leaned up close, standing tiptoe, and spat in my face. Then the blood rushed from Justine's eyes, and her head fell loosely forward, as though she'd been a horse struggling against the reins to find their pressure gone. Justine let out a whimper and sank against me. I did my best to hold her. We sort of wound up on the floor together, neither one of us in much shape to move. Justine wept. She cried piteously like a small child, mostly quiet.
"I'm sorry," she said. "I'm sorry. I want to help, but there's too much in the way. I can't think."
"Shh," I said. I tried to stroke her hair to soothe her before she could become agitated again. "It's going to be all right."
"We'll die,"
she whispered.
"I'll never see him again."
She wept for some time as the nausea and pain in my belly grew. The light outside the door never wavered. It didn't know if it was dark or light outside, or if Thomas and Michael were still alive to come after me. If they were gone, then it was my fault. I'd never be able to live with myself in any case. I decided it must be night. It must be fullest, darkest night. No other time of day could possibly suit my predicament. I rested my head on Justine's. After she fell quiet and relaxed, as though she were falling asleep after her weeping, I closed my eyes and struggled to come up with a plan, but I didn't have anything. Nothing. It was all but over. Something stirred in the shadows where the laundry was piled. Both of us looked up. I started to push Justine away, but she said, Don't go over there. Why not? I asked. You won't like it. I glanced at the girl, and then got up unsteadily and made my way over to the piled laundry. I clutched the towel in my hand for lack of any other weapon. Someone lay in the piled clothing, someone in a white shirt, a dark skirt, and a red cloak. "Stars above," I swore. "Susan." She groaned faintly, as though very much asleep or drugged. I hunkered down and moved clothing off her. "Hell's bells, Susan, don't try to sit up. Don't move. Let me see if you're hurt, okay?" I ran my hands over her in the dimness. She seemed to be whole, not bleeding, but her skin was blazing with fever. "I'm dizzy, thirsty," she said. "You've got a fever. Can you roll over toward me? The light, it hurts my eyes." "It did mine, too, when I woke up. It will pass." "Don't," Justine whispered. She sat on her heels and rocked slowly back and forth. "You won't like it. You won't like it." I glanced back at Justine as Susan turned toward me, and then looked down at my girlfriend. She looked back up to me, her features exhausted, confused. She blinked her eyes against the light and lifted a slim brown hand to shield her face. I caught her hand halfway and stared down at her. Her eyes were black. All black. Black and staring, glittering, darker than pitch, with no white to them at all to distinguish them as human. My heart leapt up into my throat, and things began to spin faster around me. "You won't like it," Justine intoned. "They changed her. The Red Court changed her. Bianca changed her."
"Dresden?" Susan whispered. "Dear God," I thought, "this can't be happening. Mr. Dresden, I'm so thirsty."